McNulty's done incredibly well to get up above Cargill and find Bennett. It's into the box. McNulty, cut back for Roberts. It's Gary Roberts for Bobby. Bobby are leading in the fourth round of the FA Cup. Mark McNulty, but a good chance by Doyle. For McNulty on the edge. Mark McNulty scores for Bobby. Smashes it past McCormack. Won by Doyle. Finished by the returning Mark McNulty. First left blood for Bobby. They're in dreamland early here at Fratton.
There's a through ball to Jamal Lowe. Jamal Lowe's onside. The flag stayed down. Jamal Lowe, nonchalant, fantastic, brilliant. Pompey will be promoted at this rate.
That is it. Pompey are champions. They won League Two in the most dramatic of circumstances.
The PO4 podcast with Hugh Bunce, proud to be Pompey.
Hi Pompey fans, and welcome to PO4 Forecast episode 189. Well, we're back, and it's about a week away for the season to get started, and here are our season predictions. Joining the podcast today, all the way from a small island off the coast of Sydney, is Andy Mitchmore. How are you, Andy?
Hello, Bunce. Good morning, boys. Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Yeah, living the dream. I think you asked me how I was. Yeah, pretty good. It's pretty damn quiet early morning, so I'm just faking the energy till I make it.
Are you currently in a sauna? It looks like you're in a sauna.
And, my cousin's got like a wooden lodge down the bottom of their garden. I'm staying in that. So I'm on the constant lookout for anything that's going to kill me, essentially. So there's no snakes here, but there are lots of spiders. So, and I don't do well with that. So if I suddenly go off the call, I've seen a redback. I've been reliably informed it's fine because on most parts of the body, they don't even puncture the skin. That's a direct quote, but I don't really fancy it either way. So if I suddenly go, it's either a huntsman has run at me or a redback has jumped at me and I'm not coping. So yeah, that's getting the disclaimer out the way straight early doors if I disappear halfway.
I'll be honest, Andy, you're a braver man than me. I would be shitting myself looking for spiders. This is one of those situations which I just don't do well with, you know, even small ones. So giant ones that could kill you, eat you or whatever, I'm just not game for.
Mate, it was awful. I went for a pee the other day. This is definitely too much information, anecdote straight out the gate. And I went into the bathroom and there was one on the ceiling. And I said to my cousin, I'm pretty chill about it. Like, it's not huge. You don't need to move it, anything like that. But what type of spider is it, out of interest? And he said, like, the only thing that would make me not okay. He's like, oh, no, no need to worry about that, mate. It's just a jumping spider. And I was like, that's not a thing. That shouldn't be a thing. Why do spiders need to jump? That's unnecessary. They don't, nothing in their life needs jumping. So yeah, unimpressed. Yeah, it's my fifth time out here and I've managed to not ever get bitten by anything as yet, touch wood. I've dodged the jellyfish and all that. But yeah, maybe fifth time's a charm. I'll let you know.
Well, let's hope no sharks eat Andy. But join us for podcast as well as Freddie Webb. How are you, mate?
Oh, I'm not so bad. Yeah, just normal week for me. Enjoying the summer. Had a little break, from the football, aside from the extra. And unfortunately, instead of Australia, I'm enjoying the dulcet tones and environment of Hilsey instead, which is obviously just as much of a landmark and just as much of a tourist destination.
Someone's got to do it, Fred. And if my leg gets chomped off by a shark, you'll be quite happy to be in Hilsey, I'd imagine. We do get little tight well around here, so got to be slightly careful in the water. But they're mostly harmless, the other sharks. We could turn this into an Australian wildlife podcast. I'm sure that's much more interesting than our pre-season.
Yeah, I'm sure Cassini Yenge would love it.
Yeah,
exactly. Honestly, I was quite tempted to head out there and have a cheeky little scout because I was only a few miles from, you know, where he plays. And when the news came through, I was in Sydney at the time, but someone recommended me not to go to Western Sydney. I was in sort of south centralish, and someone said if you go there, you're likely to get your passport nicked. So I decided to do online research rather than actually going out in person for a scout.
What kind of Australians are trying to break into the UK with a passport? I thought everyone here is just trying to get out there. So anyway, who knows about that? Let's talk about the podcast, what we're going to do today. So first of all, we're going to go through our predictions for the season. Who gets promoted? Who gets relegated? And, you know, just so everyone can laugh at us later on in the year when we're hopelessly wrong and all that malarkey. And then we're going to talk about Pompey's new signing in goal, the magician of Ryan Schofield. And then we spoke to, Andy's giving me a funny look, and then we spoke to Gaz Hutchinson, from the Stacey West to talk and give us the lowdown on everything to do with Anthony Scully. And then we're going to talk about whatever we're doing now. Probably Andy, hopefully not being chased by anything else in Australia and all that malarkey. So let's get started. Freddie, you've probably been spending days, haven't you? You've had a bit of time off. You've probably just thought, I know what I'm going to do with all my time off. I'm going to be reading season previews and doing scouting. But should we start this by doing our top six to get promoted? It sort of seems that we should maybe do it in the order of sixth to top. So sort of counting down to who's going to become number one. So we'll do this in a quick roundtable way. It doesn't need to be massively in depth. Obviously, give your thoughts for, you know, why you've made your picks, etc. But let's get started with you then, Fred. Number six, who is going to come sixth and sneak into the playoffs, please, this season?
Oof. Well, I've gone through League One today on my day off and picked out some clubs that I like. And it actually made me feel better about where Portsmouth are, actually, somehow, before we get to that prediction later on. But we'll see. Sneaking into sixth. So here, I'm going to go Barnsley. I know they've lost Michael Duff. I know they've lost Mads Andersen, one of the best in halves of the league at that time. They've brought in some good players already. Corey O'Keefe, who was probably the only one of the only decent players to play for Forest Green, got lots of assists from wing back. Max Watters is a good striker. And they've still got a lot of players still that I really like. Nicky Cadden, Devante Cole, Luke O'Connell. According to Transfer Mark, they still have Callum Stiles. And if he's playing in League One, that's also a very good rep. They've just got a strong backbone of a squad that I really like. So that's why I've put them in sixth place.
Andy Mitchamore, are you feeling the love of Barnsley and put them in the top six at number six?
I mean, I don't want to spoil anything later on in the pod. I am feeling the love for Barnsley, but I don't think they'll come sixth. I've gone a bit left field here because I think it's going to be, I don't want to be doing the same thing or saying the same teams. So I've gone a little bit left field. And I think we're going to see another, after a poor year, I think Oxford are going to be up there this season. You're giving me a look like you might have done a similar thing. Yeah, maybe. Oh, we'll find out. Yeah, I don't want to spoil it for the listeners. Can you imagine? So they're going to be there or thereabouts for the playoffs. And I'm going to put them in sixth. I think got a good manager leading them since Robinson left. Is it Liam Manning there after doing bits for MK Dons in the past? And their summer recruitment, I think, has been pretty good. Brought in a couple of names that at the time I would have been quite happy to see at Pompey. There were a couple we were linked with who I just dropped out of my brain as soon as we didn't sign them. But I remember having sort of low-key envy. And it would not surprise me to see them around that sort of 8th, 7th, 6th at the end of the season. So, yeah, I'll put them in at 6th. How about you, Bunce?
I also went for Oxford as well. Hence my look of throwing my hands up in the air.
Great minds think alike.
I was thinking of, you know, that you're talking about attacking talent. They added Ruben Rodriguez. Bit of a tongue twister for me there from Notts County, who obviously is quite creative. I'm going to call him a goal completion and sort of thing machine in the way of goals and assists. I think he'll make the step up quite easily this season. He's a player that I really kind of wanted in that sort of creative role for us as well. I think that they're annoying because they did underachieve last season. And I thought that they should have done a lot better with the squad they've got. I like Liam Manning as a manager. I think in the right setting with the right players, and Oxford do play that sort of football that he likes to play as well, I think that Oxford United will come in sixth. All right, Freddie, let's go to number five. What are you saying? Who's coming fifth?
Well, who's coming fifth? You're going to be very surprised about this, Buns, because we were chatting earlier about this club not being in the playoffs for ages, and you would assume that I'd be cynical. I've gone with the beloved Portsmouth Football Club in fifth. Genuinely, looking at the other teams on paper, initially I thought, oh God, we're going to finish seventh again and be very cynical. But looking at it purely on paper and setting up the formation in my head, which is 4-3-3, presumably, and a high-pressing football, I don't think there are many teams with as much of a complete squad as Pompey. Now, I like the midfield, the new wingers that have been brought in, very exciting if they can get them going. Obviously, we have Colby Bishop, 20-goal season striker. That obviously helps. Brought in Regan Paul to stabilise the centre-half, so that's good. I do have some concerns about his passing stats, which we may get onto later on if we have time. But I just don't see many clubs that are better than Portsmouth. Some of them haven't gone through as massive of an overhaul, and I'll go on to those clubs later. But no, I think Portsmouth will have a good season. I genuinely believe it for a while. And it may start slow, but they've got the tools to get into the playoffs, and that's why I've picked them to finish fifth.
Andy, are you going to slide Pompey in at number five?
I was actually going to, but I don't want to have the same Pompey prediction as Freddie, because that's kind of not that exciting. So I'm going to pop in Peterborough at number five in the league. And again, there was sort of an upward trend towards the end of last season. They've had a decent player-wise. And, I mean, they always seem to be there or thereabouts. I'm plonking them in at, well, I did have them at four, but again, just to sort of not be the same as Fred, I'm going to put Pompey in at fourth instead, just for the optimism side of things. But yeah, I'll put Posh in at fifth. How about you? How about you, Hugh? That is a mouthful and a half at 7:30 in the morning.
How about you, Hugh? Hugh is going to go with Blackpool. I've got a feeling, just because I like Neil Critchley, I think he's a good manager. Blackpool seem to be one of those teams, I feel, that have come down, not lost loads of players. I mean, they have lost some key players, but I'm looking at some of the additions they've made. I like Matthew Pennington as a centre-back for them. I think he's going to be a pretty solid option at the back there for them. I think I like Carl Joseph more than other people. I know we spoke about him as a striker when Swansea were looking to loan him out. I think, was it last season in the summer? And I spoke about that on the podcast. I think he's going to be a good option there as well. I just think that under Critchley, he likes to play this sort of, you know, interested pressing football. And I think that that will translate well to League One. And I've got Blackpool coming in at fifth. Freddie, who's coming in at fourth above Pompey?
This is a tough one because I do like the other four teams. I thought about putting Peterborough on my list, but looking at all the players they're aiming to get rid of, I just think they won't stand up as much, even though they've brought in some players that I like. No, but for fourth, this might be rogue to some people. I'm going to go with Charlton Athletic. I just like a lot of their players that they put together. Bringing in Harry Istutt, love him as a goalkeeper. If Alfie May can get back on the goal scoring form, he'll add a lot to them. Panucci Kamara as well in midfield, who's fairly highly rated as well. They've got a lot of key players already in the side. Michael Hector, very good centre-half for this level. Conor McGrandall, solid midfielder. Scott Fraser, who has been on the PO forecast transfer list for God knows how long. He's still there at Cam, which is brilliant. And then forward weapons like Charlie Kirk, Glory Blackett-Taylor. It's a side that's underachieved with the players they've had for so long. And I just think now they've strengthened really well. And I think they'll be up there in the playoff level. And they haven't lost many players. I think the only notable absence is Albie Morgan and Sean Clure. And that's it. They've pretty much kept a lot of the players who are good in certain scenarios. That's my rogue pick. And I think they'll finish fourth, I think.
Andy Mitchell, what are you saying in your little sauna cabin over there in Australia?
I wish it was warm enough to be in a sauna cabin. It's winter here, bud. So it's about the same temperature here as it is with you, to be fair. But yeah, winter. Yeah, I put Pompey in fourth as of 5 minutes ago when Fred took my fifth slot for a lot of the reasons that Fred said. I mean, firstly, I don't want to be the guy that doesn't even put them in the playoff spots the year that we get into the playoffs. I think, yeah, we've got fairly well-balanced squad. I like the fact that we have nice options in the centre-back position, let's say. Pre-season is not about results, thankfully, as we're talking today. I lost to AFC Wimbledon. But I do think this is on the proviso that we hold on to Colby Bishop. I do think if we lose him, a lot of the hard work they've done in the summer transfer window gets undone. You know, it's important we hold on to him, obviously. That's pretty advanced. Yeah. Goal scorer, but on the proviso we hold on to Colby Bishop, I think there is a stronger squad than there was last year. The recruitment we've seen has been quite a mixture of solid squad player and potentially quite exciting flair player. I think Messina has balanced that pretty well on the transfer market. And I mean, we're going to know a lot by the end of September. Sounds like a classic podcast cliche, but on paper, there's the opportunity for a really positive start in August with the way the fixtures have fallen. And then I think it's September is a really tough run of games, fairly early doors. in the season. So I'm putting us, yeah, in fourth. And I mean, I've just realised that I completely left Blackpool out of my six, which is stupid. So I'm kicking Barnsley out. So even though I said earlier that I was going to include Barnsley, they're out, they're gone. So yeah, I had to do a quick recalculation there. I've been awake for about 17 minutes, so I'm blaming it on that.
I love that. You've changed your mind during the process there. You're allowed to do that 100%. Let's be honest. That's how we roll. I'm also going to go here. Now, I've got Charlton at fourth, which means that, again, I'm looking up the table and I don't know if you guys have got a feeling that I'm either incredibly down on Pompey or incredibly up on us as we sneak towards the summit. But Freddie did a pretty good analysis there of Charlton. I'll throw in George Dobson as well. I don't think he mentioned in the list of players who I actually really rate there. I think they're going to be pretty good this season. They've got a lot of depth. They've got 6 points guaranteed against us. So, you know, that could be the difference anyway between finishing higher up the league or not, because Charlton always seem to have our number as well. I think that they're one of those teams that could even potentially finish a bit higher than fourth. So we'll see. But there's just a few teams above them now who I actually am higher on. So I won't go on too much because Fred did a pretty good analysis. But yeah, Charlton for me at fourth. Third place, Freddie, where are you going?
Yeah, I really like the three teams that are left. And I think the team that I'm going to say that are going to finish third, I wouldn't be surprised if they finished in the top two. I'm going to go with Derby County. Excellent manager of Paul Warne. Brought in Sonny Bradley at centre-half, who is a championship centre-half, dropping down into League One. He's going to be incredibly solid in this side. Curtis Nelson as well is going to play very well. They brought in Joe Ward from Peterborough, who has a lot of creativity. And they've also kept a hold of many other players. Sibley, Conor Hourihan, Max Bird, James Collins. There's a lot there. I think the only reason why I haven't put them in the top two is I don't think they've got that striker that pops into my head and goes, wow, he's going to score at least 20 goals in this league. I know they've got Conor Washington and Collins. I'm not sure if they're at the level of scoring 20 goals. I think they might get 15 apiece, perhaps. They've also lost David McGoldrick, who is surprisingly a massive loss for them. They lost Knight as well, and Bielik. Even though Bielik's been injured, it's one less option they have. But no, I think Derby County will get better. They've also not under like transfer restrictions this season as well, so they can bring in players for money if they're able to get it, so they could conceivably strengthen until the end of the summer window. I think Derby County would be up there, and I'm looking forward to going to that ground again for an away game because I really like that stadium. It's a cool one.
Andy, what are you saying? Are you all aboard the Derby County train in third?
Not in third, no. Fred's actually put a fairly decent argument there together, I think, to counter me putting them in my top two. So fair play, Freddie. I've actually put Bolton in third. Again, a little bit maybe unexpected, but I think they're one of those, without having real standout players who sort of grab your eye or you know their name particularly well, other than maybe Dion Charles, they're one of those squads that's really solid. And I mean, Dion Charles is going to score a decent number at this level. I rate Kyle Dempsey in midfield, and they, you know, Pompey favourite Dan and Lundaloo, which, you know, we all really enjoy watching him play again, Pompey, for whoever he's turning out. And one of your favourite players, Cameron Jerome as well, Freddie, Hugh. So there are players in who I think over the course of the season, they're just really consistent. Further likely to see all the ebbs and flows in form with Bolton that we maybe see with other teams such as Pompey, where we tend to be fairly streaky, don't we, over the course of the season, and it's normally one of the bad streaks that costs us. I don't think we had that with Bolton, and for that reason of being, you know, solid but not spectacular, I would expect them to be in and around the playoffs for a lot of the season. But then if they can string some results together in the final 5-6 games, I'd expect them to be able to push up to third. And this is one that I'm kind of going with my gut. I don't think logically it's very easy to come up with a good rationale for it being the case, but going with it anyway. Hope I've not broken up that time. Also, I should probably say, if I'm talking over you lads at any time, there's a slight delay, probably because of the combination of the distance and the fact that I'm on some fairly dodgy Wi-Fi on this tiny little island, which does not have a lot of Wi-Fi. So that's why, if we're talking over each other, apologies.
I thought we did that just generally, so didn't notice any difference, if I'm honest, Andy. I'm going to come on to my third place team, and I'm going to go with Pompey in third. Now, I couldn't put us in the top two. And I struggled with this a little bit because I was at the AFC Wimbledon game yesterday, and you've got that logical head on when you talk about sports and analyze it and talk to others. You're saying, don't put any sort of weight on friendlies, etc. At the end of the day, it was one of those things which that is probably right. It did look a bit more disappointing than hopeful yesterday, but again, trying to keep the level headed with it. I want to go a third. I think the midfield options are good. I've talked about it a little bit to death on Pompey. The only thing I think we're missing is a sort of a creative player to unlock people. So I'm sort of banding my third place on the basis that I think we bring in another creative, sort of maybe like a 10 or someone who can play in that role, like a creative 8-10 sort of thing. I think we look a lot stronger than last season. I think the league looks a lot weaker, and I'll come on to talk about the teams above us as well, why I think they pip us. But for me, right now, this second in time, we've got depth across the squad. I like the changes at centre-back. I thought Shaughnessy looked a lot better than I thought as well when we signed him, when I've seen him play in person. He looks pretty confident. He actually moved the ball pretty well. I was a little bit concerned he was a bit too slow, etc., but liked him a lot more as well. I'm pretty confident about this season. Not quite confident enough to put us in the top two, but I'm going to go with Pompey in third. Freddie, number two, who is getting promoted automatically on the web scale this season?
The web scale. Now, I really like this side, even though they had a slight bit of tumultuous time in the Championship last season and a bit of manager of a merry-go-round. I'm going to go with Blackpool to finish second. I know they've lost some good players, namely Jerry Yates to Swansea, and they've lost Keshi Anderson as well, and Reece James. Neil Critchley's come back in. Yes, he was absolutely awful at QPR, but already shown that he can get this side promoted and get a lot out of a lot of the players who were with him previously. They've brought in some good signings as well. Ollie Norburn from Peterborough, very good. As Hugh said, I like Matthew Pennington. But some of the key players Blackpool have already a Championship standard. Kenny Dougal in the centre of midfield. Excellent midfielder. CJ Hamilton, explosive winger. Tom Tribal, I do like if he's fit. The 20-goal-a-season striker for me, Shane Lavery. I've seen him play Northern Ireland International. I really like him as a centre forward. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets 15 to 20 goals, I think. But I think the only reason why they finished second for me is that the other side are running off a bit more form. I think their manager's better and their style of football is also a bit better with some of the players. So yeah, Blackpool in second. They're in much better state than the two other Championship clubs that just look as if they're a complete basket case since they've gone down. So there we are.
So Andy, here's now when you step in and tell us one of those basket case teams is going to come second.
Yeah, I'm going Wigan. no, I'm not. although if they do end up coming second, I'm claiming that as his prediction. But I'm a little bit concerned that I've missed someone here. Off what Freddie said. But I've put Derby in second. which Fred's made quite a good argument, as I just said, about why they potentially wouldn't be in the top two. With some of the names you see in the squad, I mean, Connor Washington is going to score on a fairly regular basis. I rate James Collins. They're just a strong side, strong squad, I should say. Connor Hurahan in midfield. They've got a lot of names on there where James is capable of really hurting you on an individual day and create those individual moments of quality. And losing McGoldrick is a big, big, big loss to them. I do rate him a lot, but even with them not being there or thereabouts for automatics, I just can't. I'm probably less confident in that I would have been if I'd done more than an hour's prep. I'm popping them in second, and I'm slightly concerned as to who's Fred has put in first.
Number two, I've got Bolton. For me, they're a team that look like one of those complete teams that are off the field, which I think is good. I like Ian Everett as a manager. I think he gets the best out of players. The team believe in what he plays. I think if you look at the... I'm trying to get charge me to upgrade my subscription here. I think he gets the best out of his players, for instance, in the scene. Sharon Britton, who's the owner, is putting money in and off on and off the field. There's a really good feeling around the club at this moment in time. They made the playoffs before, built on the promotion season. They've got a strong squad already in place. The likes of Deion Charles up front, Ricardo Santos at the back. I really like Morley in the centre. They've got Dempsey as well. The only thing is with them, which is why I've not put them first, is I'm a little bit concerned. And Freddie's talking about 20-goal strikers, but I'm looking at Deion Charles, and very much like Colby Bishop with Pompey, he scored pretty much nearly all of their goals. I mean, if you look at the level, I think he got 17 goals in the league. The next player to score for them was like 5 goals, I believe, off the top of my head. I'm not as sold on Scummer Lindelöf as a player. Curse my words coming back on that. And I don't really like Victor Adebayo. However, just the way they play, the sort of the system, I think they sort of tired out a little bit at the end of the season last year, got overrun by a very good Barnsley side, who I do not think will be as good this season. Therefore, I'm thinking Bolton are going to press on this season and come second. Freddie, who have you got number one?
Well, you mentioned the team just now. I went with Bolton Wanderers. I like Ian Everett's style of football, even though in some of his interviews he comes across as a bit of a spanner. I do like the squad depth of this side. An awful lot in the attacking areas. I know Deion Charles got so many of their goals last season, but they've got options there. Adebayo, different target man option. Jan-Danny Bodvarsson, very good striker for this level. Some creativity out wide in Brandel Williams. They brought in Carlos Mendes Gomez, who's going to score a lot of goals from the wide areas. He's a bit more of an inside forward to support that. Strong midfield as well with Kyle Dempsey, who I particularly like. And there's other players like Declan John as well. Their biggest loss is probably Trafford in goal, who was probably the best goalkeeper in the league last season. They've proven that they got a bit of a knack with goalkeepers, and they signed Nathan Baxter on a free from Chelsea. So we've seen a lot of evidence for young goalkeepers with Premier League experience coming into League One and doing quite well. So I think if Baxter slots in pretty well, and if their squad is as good as I think it is, and they maintain the style of football, that pressing system, but also possession-based in possession, I think they're the team to beat, I think. Even though I could see Blackpool or Derby potentially finishing higher than them, I've gone with Bolton for the top spot.
Andy Mitchell-Moore, did you actually forget to add someone to your list, or do you have a number one for who's going to win the league this season?
No, we're all good. Crisis averted. I've gone with Blackpool to win the league, and I was worried that Freddie was going to come up with a name that I'd not even put in my top six, but thankfully that wasn't the case. Yeah, I think I don't want to sort of just repeat what's already been said here. It's not fun for anyone, but yeah, some of the overall squad standard, you'd say, is almost Championship. I think you look at, you know, Pennington, for example, is going to do a good job in the field. I rate Ollie Norburn as well, and, you know, already been mentioned Shane Lavery. They've got players that are going to hurt you. They have squad depth, and I can't really see past them for the league. I've got an exciting winger called Owen Dale as well, who I'm expecting to really light up League One this year coming. I think he's really one for the future, so
big things.
Yeah, excited to see. Big things predicted. Yeah, I actually quite like him. But it'll be interesting to see what they can do. But I'd be very surprised if they're not in the top two, at least come the end of the season this year round. How about you, Bunce? Who have you put at the top?
Oh, yeah, it's my turn, isn't it? So I've gone with Derby to win the league this season in first place.
Yeah, have you gone Port Vale?
Port Vale. No, I've gone Derby. I like Paul Warne as a manager on the level that I think he's one of these managers that knows how to get teams promoted out of this league. I think he's done it twice, maybe three times. They had a bit of a makeshift team last season, as we've all talked about. They did pretty well, considering they sort of patched players together very late in the transfer window. He looks to me like he's going to move to his preferred formation, which is probably playing three at the back. And then he brings in two players. He brings in Joel Ward from Peterborough to play on one side, on the right. Good crosser, gets a lot of assists, can score Pippin with goals. And then you look on the other side, they brought in Callan Edler, who's played 20-odd games in the Championship for whole last season. Again, he likes to cross the ball, he likes to move forward. I can see them then getting a lot of, you know, luck in from wide areas as well. Freddie talks about not having maybe a bona fide striker, but I think if you look across this team, I think they've got the ability to score goals from lots of different positions. I like Hourihane when he can play at centre midfield. we talk about losing McGoldrich. I think that is a big loss, but he was obviously tiring as the season went on a bit. He is getting a bit older. And when you look at players to replace him, speaking to Derby fans before, I think Louis Sibley, who's quite young, he's 21-ish, he's a midfielder, could make a big step this season. So I'm sort of counting him to maybe have a bit more of a breakout season, more of a role to be sort of leaned on to do that as well. Conor Washington will do a lot of running, a lot of chasing, he'll do a lot of pressing. That'll only add to that sort of system where they're sort of getting the ball up quickly, very physical, pressing teams. I just fancy Derby to win the league this season. I think with the additions they've made, it sort of suits how the manager wants them to play. I think this season, Derby have enough to win the league and will be promoted as champions. Well, that's good. We all went for different teams, which just goes to show how we are looking, I suppose, as the league, because it is very open this season. I'm sure none of us will get it right at all. But let us know what you think at PO Forecast. And just to let people know, as one of the changes for the podcast going forward, I've even added the email address on my phone so I get notifications if you email us. So it's poforecast@gmail.com if you don't use Twitter. So email us as well and I'll be able to do that. All right then, let's get into that's the promotions. That's the funny bear. Let's go down to the sad bit now. Which fan bases are going to be upset of dropping out of the mighty best league in the world, League One, back into League Two and struggling to get out of there? So let's have a think about this. Freddie Webb, I want to know your four teams, please, to get relegated out of this league.
I have to admit, I forgot to prep the relegation bit, so I'm working off the top of my head first of all. But to start with,
welcome to the club, Freddie.
Yeah, well, I've prepped everything else, so it's fine. Yeah. First team to get relegated, Fleetwood Town. I know they've got a lot of good players in their squad, but their owner's going to prison. They're a basket case. They're relegated. Another club that's also a basket case, Reading. They're getting relegated as well. They've got a transfer embargo, and so many of their other players are probably going to get sold at some point. Other sides. Now, this is the bit that I haven't prepped, so I'm going to have a quick scan. Northampton Town, purely because they're a promoted side, and I don't think they're as strong as some of the other sides like Stevenage or Carlisle. I think they'll be in there as well. And I've also gone for Cheltenham Town, because they haven't really replaced Alfie May or Unlunderloo or many of their other good players either. So those are my four. I don't know how much basis there is for those four teams, but there we are. Those are my four to get relegated.
Go on then, Andy. We've got a minute.
I really enjoyed that, Freddie. Thank you. Absolutely shooting from the hip. I've done no prep, but they are going down. They are going down. They're a basket case. They are going down. I love the definiteness. I've gone Carlisle, Wigan, Cheltenham, Northampton to go down. A mixture of basket case and low quality. I think Stevenage will be fine. I think they've recruited well over summer. And I think these are four weaker teams. But I think the relegation is a bit of a crapshoot compared to promotion. I think there's a lot of teams that could be in trouble.
All right, my first team to go down is Fleetwood Town. They're a basket case, has already been said by Freddie. The owner's been locked up. And I think now the comeuppance has happened for Fleetwood. Sorry, Fleetwood fans, but being bankrolled on dodgy money's out. They're all the fans are going to leave, become Blackpool fans again. Let's be honest. The cheap tickets of Fleetwood aren't really going to try and bring them in. So I'm going to say Fleetwood finish rock bottom. And sorry to all you Fleetwood fans out there, if any of you are bothering to listen to this, but you're going down. And then I think Cheltenham are going to come next from bottom after Fleetwood. I'm going to go with that. I've just got a feeling. The post-Alfie May era, that's it. You boys are down as well, as much as I quite like Cheltenham as a club. Which makes it a bit more difficult. I'm going to say Port Vale get relegated this season. And again, I looked around and thought, their fans have been on the case of the manager before, got him out. And you look at what's going on at Port Vale now, generally. I think they're going down. There we go. This is my ultimate prep for the relegation zone. Probably shouldn't even bother doing this. And then let's have a think about it. Promoted team, which one of those is going down? And it's the Cobblers, isn't it? It's got to be Northampton Town. I think they look like the least impressive of all the teams that come up for me. I don't think their style always translates that well to League One from League Two. They sort of play that sort of physical game. So I'm going to say those four are my teams to go down. I did say four, didn't I?
Yeah, I completely forgot about Port Vale, but I looked at their signings and thought, they might scrape it. And I completely forgot that Wigan are already on -8. So I might have picked them instead of Reading if I knew that. But there we are. I can't really change them now, can I?
No,
and Reading's manager. And Reading's manager is a scummer, so that tips it, doesn't it?
It does flow to the level. I thought about Wigan. I mean, obviously, players are ripping their contracts up. Watmore's just torn his contract up as well. He's off as well. And we'll see with the new ownership, though, whether they can stabilise the club. They are on -8. It's a tough ask to start, but in a tight league, it could make a big difference. We'll have to wait and see. Reading could get a points deduction still, Freddie. They haven't paid HMRC twice now. This is the second embargo they've got. So we'll see if that comes to light. But it looks to me like Reading might even get a points deduction. Not that I'm some sort of spokesperson for HMRC, let's be honest. But when you don't pay the tax man more than once and you go back under another embargo, that usually spells a bit of trouble for clubs. So, and to be honest, to Reading, they're spending like big money wages on players, bringing them in. And who do they get? Like Lewis Wing, people like that. Only then not to pay to their taxes again. Yeah, it's... I would not be sorry for Reading, I'm afraid, if they went down the scummer reserve team. So we'll have to see. All right. Well, there's our predictions done. Promoted and relegated. Andy's seen the spider, so he seems to be running away.
Boys, I've got a dash. I've got a hike in 3 minutes, so I've got to go and do that. I've got to go and do a hill, mountain climb, whatever. So I'm going to have to love you and leave you.
Try not to be eaten by anything, and beware of frogs as always, Andy.
Yeah, please don't get poisoned.
As always, I'll do my best. Honestly, I'm more anxious about the plane I've got to take on Monday, which I think holds about 6 people. It's like the smallest plane I would have ever been on, flying up to Port Macquarie. So yeah, I'll do my bit for the tourist board around here. Everyone go Google Lord Howe Island and book holidays here. They rely heavily on tourism. So yeah, I've done my bit for the tourist board. I think my family do stuff for them, so we need to keep the income going, hey?
Got to say, the island looks absolutely amazing. Andy's been sending me pictures, and winter seems like a good time to go because there's bugger all people there, and it looks beautiful.
Mate, it's lush, honestly. I think it's one of 4 island groups listed by UNESCO as like World Heritage Sites of Natural Beauty. It's an absolute joke, and yeah, in winter, there's only about 200 people here. There's about 150 locals here at the moment. And probably 40-ish visitors. Obviously, I'm here with family. So, yeah, it's pretty lush. Summer, it's gorgeous as well. So, yeah, do it. The film The Shallows, the one with the shark, that was filmed here. But they made it look all stormy and broody. And it's actually like the calmest beach on the planet. But anyway, I've got to go and do tourism, holiday, hikey things. So I'll speak to you soon. And, yeah, I messed up my flights home. So I missed the first game of the season because I'm an idiot. And then I messed up my time zones. I land at 6:30 in the morning and I start work at 9. It's going to be a great day. So I will speak to you back soon. Hope everyone's well. Take it easy. Bye.
See you later, Andy.
Cheers, Andy.
It's quite interesting, really, because Lord Howe Island, I believe, has the most southerly coral reef. That's my little fact there. Hence why there's loads of sharks everywhere. But anyway, hopefully Andy doesn't get eaten. Freddie, let's move on with the podcast now. Andy's not here. We've done our predictions. Should we talk about the new signing of the goalkeeper? Do you want to take that bit away?
Yeah, absolutely. So that was the main bit of news this week, that Portsmouth finally got their backup goalkeeper slot sorted in Ryan Schofield. Obviously, that opens the door for Toby Stewart and Joshua Luemi to both go out and load, which is good. They need that first-team experience. There were two ways to go after this sub-goalkeeper thing. One of them, which my dad kept mentioning, was the old 35-year-old goalkeeper that was near the end of his career and wanted to do his coaching badges. But we've gone with the opposite. We've gone with like almost a reclamation project, I feel, in Ryan Schofield, 23 years old, 6'2", went through the youth system at Huddersfield, and that's where he's played most of his games. Started for Huddersfield one season, made 30 league appearances in 2019-2020, I believe, so quite a while ago now. And has been bandied around on loan since. His prevented goals rate in that season was quite good, actually, with +6.85. And for people who don't know, that takes into account the expected goals that he faced in terms of shots, so the quality of chances against him, and compare that with the amount of goals he let in. He conceded 41 in total with 7 clean sheets in that time. His passing stats are a bit average. His long pass percentage isn't brilliant either, with 6.6 per 90 in that season with 59% accuracy. But then again, we are looking at stats from 3 years ago. But since, he's banded around on loan, was at Crawley for two games, then at Hibernian, where I don't think he played in the league, where it looks of things. He might have played in the odd in a Scottish Cup game or something, but I haven't seen him otherwise. Perfect that he's on a one-year deal. He'll push Will Norris, who was obviously going to be the starter. It was fairly... We all thought that after Norris signed his three-year deal. But Schofield will push him up. He's got solid Football League experience as well. It's not as if we're throwing in a kid in cup games or if Norris gets injured. I think a solid signing on a one-year deal, if it doesn't work afterwards, fine. And yeah, we'll see if he we'll see how much he actually plays, because we'll see how often he appears in cup games and so on.
Sort of does fit into the narrative of us looking at players with potential upside. He does have that upside. He's a decent age as well. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of game time he gets. He sort of, we talked about, I think with Gabe Sutton on the podcast, talked about, were we going to bring in a different keeper to sort of battle it out with Norris, weren't we, when we first signed him? We did our, actually, no, that was me and Jack did our preview with Gabe on the podcast. I think it's a fairly all right signing. I spoke to some Crawley fans. He only played twice there. They quite know what happens, and he got recalled again. I think he went to Hibs first, didn't he? And then Crawley. So in that order, they recalled him from Hibs because he wasn't playing enough, sent him to Crawley. And then he only had two games after doing extensive video interviews and all kinds of stuff about playing for them, which I thought was quite amusing. But he obviously needs a home, doesn't he? It's not a loan deal. So we'll see what he can do, basically. But there's not really much more to say about it, apart from you're getting the new kit, the new keeper kit.
No, I'm not going to get a keeper kit with Schofield on the back of it just for the lols. I don't know who I'd get on the back of a shirt this season, actually, if I get a shirt. But no, I prefer going this route rather than a young keeper who's never played in the Football League before. I like the fact that Schofield's got some experience in the back pocket, even if it is from a while ago. And who knows? He impressed for Huddersfield at that time to be the starting keeper. I know it didn't last, but that says a lot. And Huddersfield didn't get relegated that season. They finished 20th, which, you know, I think around that time they were earmarked to go down, I believe. And some of his stats are okay. His passing is a bit, yeah, but I always favour shot stopping at this level anyway. But no, I think it's a solid signing. Nothing wrong with it, in my opinion.
I think we're both pretty happy with it, aren't we, considering what the alternatives could have been. So it's not like we brought in some 38-year-old old-timer who's part-time coach, as you said. So overall, I'm pretty happy with that. So let's have a chat about some of the other new bits since we last had a chat on the podcast, Freddie. Regan Poole. He's quite an interesting player. Obviously, he's not too tall, so there's a lot of talk about how him and a partner will play at the back. So I'll come on to that in a second, of who we partner him up with, etc. I think it's interesting because his one-on-one defending is supposed to be pretty decent. His tracking's good. He's very mobile. That's something we have missed out a lot, actually, isn't it? When we had the sort of like the Raggett-Robertson sort of partnership, added a bit more pace to the back line. I've always thought his first pass at the back was pretty good, but you're saying the numbers say slightly differently on that as well, which is a little bit concerning for me, because when I've seen him play, I've always thought he's actually quite good at getting the ball out the back and quite good at passing it out the back as well. Overall, I think he's a pretty good signing. I mean, he was definitely touted to go to the Championship, wasn't he? I mean, I remember when he left Lincoln, they were wishing him well, which club in the Championship was going to sign for. Hence, they've now been outraged on Twitter that he's made inverted commas from Lincoln fans, you know, a sideways step, whatever they want to call it. So for me, I thought he was a great option. He didn't have Bernard, but I thought he'd come in and be that passing mobile centre-back, which allowed us to sort of the midfielders to push up with somebody who can carry the ball out from the back. That was my expectation from him. But if you've looked at the data, do you see anything different?
I looked at the data, and I will say what the data is on the passing, but I do think there's some context to add in as well. But first of all, I do think he's, as you said, a solid one-on-one defender in the duels. Very good at marking somebody. His aerial duels are a bit below average, but if you pair him with someone like a Sean Raggett, for example, that's not necessarily a worry. I just think he's got very, very good positional sense, is comfortable in possession, which is good. So he can bring the ball out of his feet quite well for a centre half. And he seemed to lead a back line for Lincoln City as well, which is also very good. And was pretty much their starter, playing 45 games. The passing stats, let's go through them. So his overall passing percentage was 72.66% last season in league games from 32.41 passes per 90 on average. That was very much below average in the bottom third of the league. Forward passes, just over 14.09 per 90 with 57.65% accuracy, again in the bottom third. But the context here is that pretty much in the same boat is Paddy O'Connor, another Lincoln centre half, who beforehand I saw his numbers at Bradford. And his numbers at Bradford were very, very solid. I think at the time he was at Bradford, I think he was in like the top third for passing accuracy and liked his progressive passes a lot and was very comfortable on the ball. Another example, again, progressive passes for Paul. He averaged 8 progressive passes per 90. That's where it goes up a significant way up pitch. And that was 60.1% accuracy, again, near the bottom third. But just underneath him is fellow Lincoln defender TJ Ayoma. Now, obviously, looking at Paul's individual stats, you'd think, oh, he's not that solid, just purely looking from the data perspective. But if you look at other Lincoln centre halves next to him, it could mean that their style of defending is just to get it up the pitch as fast as possible, where they don't have a lot of time on the ball and they just want to clear it. So their passes are a bit more rushed, so there's less accuracy on them. That's what I'm hoping for anyway. I hope that that context adds to the numbers. Maybe if we speak to Gaz another time, he may be able to give some light on that. But no, like you, I've seen Paul a lot before. And he's come from Manchester United Academy, so he should be very comfortable on the ball just in general, shouldn't he, from that pedigree. I think it's a good signing. Not as good as Bernard, obviously, who is still, as far as I'm aware, not got another club. He's been with the Gold Club with Jamaica, hasn't he? Scored in one of those games, internationals. And obviously, if Bernard comes available, I think Portsmouth will do pretty much everything to sign him. I think that goes without saying. I don't know what the centre-half partnership will be next season. I think it's fairly obvious that Shaughnessy is in the bottom rung, I think. And I think since they brought in Paul, I assume he will start. So that leaves Towler or Raggett to partner him, I think, anyway. I think that's the way they're going to go. I don't know what you think, Hugh, if you have a different opinion to me.
It's kind of weird, because in my head, and maybe not just sort of he's a Southwest boy in that sense, I kind of want to see more of Riley Towler play, right? My only issue is, are they going to be physical enough against some of these lump it up teams in this league to be able to deal with sort of like these big sort of power sort of forwards as such together? I do have a little bit of concern with that sort of pairing. Are they aerially good enough? You got Will Norris, who we talked about at Peterborough, and one of the things there was coming to collect crosses, things like that as well. Is that going to work? Ideally, it would work if they're both mobile, they could both move the ball. If we sort of get to the stage where they move the ball out quickly from feet and it allows us to get on the attack well, I'd be quite happy with that. On the flip side of that, if you're talking about using someone a bit more aerial and someone who's got a bit more presence, I actually am leaning more to use Shaughnessy over Raggett. I thought he looked more composed on the ball when I saw him play. And although when we spoke to Ed Walker on the podcast, he told me about him being quite good at getting a first pass out, etc. And I had those concerns about the fact that Burton playing such a low block and people running in behind him, and was he going to be mobile enough to do that as well? But those are all concerns I've got with Sean Raggett anyway, let's be honest. And when I've seen Shaughnessy play, he just looks a lot calmer on the ball than Sean Raggett. A calmer on the ball sort of pairing with someone who's a bit younger and somebody who's a bit smaller, etc., for me seems to be preferable, I think. So in an ideal world, I'd like to see Towler and Paul play at the back. However, I think from a just industrious sort of practical level, you might need to have one of the other two. In which case, I actually think you might see the season start with the sort of Shaughnessy pool partnership. It'll be interesting to see if it happens, but a taller centre-back who can also pass the ball out from the back, for me, is preferable. And quite surprisingly, I didn't think that. I was quite underwhelmed when he was signed originally. I'm sort of leaning maybe towards more of a Shaughnessy and Regan pullback partnership.
We looked at some of the other clubs who we put to have higher than Portsmouth. And I do think it shows that, in my opinion anyway, I still think centre-half is the weakest part of this side, in my humble opinion, because I think at fullback we're fine, because you've got Rafferty or Swanson at right back, who are both interchangeable, can both deliver a cross and can both get up and down. You have Sparks and Ogilvy, which fill different needs. One more attacking, one more defensive. I like both of them. I'm assuming we're playing a 4-3-3, because I know a lot of people are still wondering, oh, who's going to be the number 10? That argument still hasn't died. But I still think, even though it's a bit deeper, a midfield three of Pack, Lowry, Morel should control games at this level. And it should provide a lot of space for the fullbacks to go up, for the wingers to be very attacking in the wide areas, with Colby Bishop down the middle. I think that's probably where we're going to get most of our goals from. Not from necessarily watching the friendlies, but purely just logistically looking at how this side set up. And it allows them to be very aggressive in the press, because Lowry and Burrell can do that, and then Pat can be that stabling thing in the middle. Bearing all that in mind, I still think, obviously, I think Will Norris is a solid keeper, but he's not the best keeper at this level. I'd like to see him play a bit more before I have a proper opinion on him. I still think we need a taller centre half who's extremely comfortable playing the ball out. I think Deshaun Bernard, obviously, on that list, but will probably go to a Championship side. Obviously, people are talking about Jack Watmore now, but he is a Championship centre half, so we'll probably go to a Championship side on a free. I still think that really is, for me, the only place, because if you look at the centre midfield, you got Burrell, Pack, Lowry starting, then you got Devlin behind, you got Stevenson as the sub for like Marlon Pack. And I think you got another centre midfielder that I'm probably missing as well off the top of my head. I can't remember the others, but I think we're still well stocked, aren't we?
Stevenson looks like a tidy player as well, I thought, on the ball. He sort of likes to get the ball out of his feet, keeps things ticking. And I think he'll be a good player to have in for Pack in that sense, because he does fill that role as well of getting the ball ticking. He's maybe a bit more of a short passer, pass and move sort of deep line midfielder. So I'd be interested to see how that fits in. Rather than Pack, I'd say he's a bit more expansive. Maybe is the word I'd use to describe his passing range, etc. I'll be interested to see, but I still think that if you're looking for, when I talked about a 10, a creative player, it might end up being sort of a creative 8-10 who can play in that three, who's sort of almost a bit more of a free-flowing player out of the three. Because you still look at it and you could say that Lowry, you could say that Stevenson, Morel, you can see these players can really be interchanged a little bit between each other. So I wouldn't be surprised if we bring in someone who's got a bit more of an attacking eight, who's got that on their mind, someone who's just going to be a little bit further up the pitch and sort of cheat the system a little bit, be a little bit less defensive and provide some more link-up play between the attackers and the midfield. I like the midfield. I just think that we are missing something a little bit further up the pitch that links two together. I think that's why maybe we looked at a 4-2-3-1 the other day, having a look at how that would fit with our wide players. I was quite impressed with Gavin White. I think he's got this really good centre of gravity. The ball sticks to him. I like his movement as well. I thought Kamara played as well. He looks good with the ball as well. He also tracked back a fair amount. You look at backups as well for Colby Bishop. We really were missing, I still think, that target man sort of focal point on Tuesday. I thought Sadie worked very hard in that game, but I'm not sold that if Bishop's not playing, for instance, it's going to be an easy sub in. Again, like you, I'm pretty happy with the wing backs, with the right and left backs. I think we've got good depth there. We know what we think about the right backs. They're both great. I think Swanson and Rafferty are great as well. But yeah, up front, I'm kind of happy with it. I just want to see us be able to get those players up front on the ball more in more advanced positions. And I think that lends to an attacking eight who's sort of a 10 attacking eight.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. I just went for a quick look at the squad list. And yeah, the other centre midfielder that was sort of on my mind but wasn't was Duett White. But I think considering Portsmouth might be pushing for promotion, I think it might have to be a Football League or a National League loan for him, I think. He seems to come across as more of like a deeper midfielder anyway, from the very small sample size that I've seen of him. I don't think he's like the proper creative eight, I don't think. That and the centre half, I personally think, is missing. I think we can get away with not having the target man striker. I know we'll struggle with that in maybe some games where we're playing against a physical side. But I do think there's enough creativity in the wide areas and up front to deal with that. So I know Portsmouth signed 12 players, and we know we're the greedy football fans that all, again, want more signings. But I still think that's what's missing. If there's another creative eight there, like a creative box-to-box midfielder who likes to go forward a little bit, and a tall centre-half who could pass the ball out, I think we're nearly set, I think. It will be as set as Pompey will be this for this season anyway.
Could we get a bit lucky in the sense of having someone who likes to play the ball forward, who likes to play forward passes and likes to win balls forward in offensive duels last season, should we say, in the Northern Irish League? Could someone like Terry Devlin potentially, as the season goes on, help fill that role? He sort of, when I'm looking at the profile of players, he maybe jumps out as a player who could maybe play a bit further up the pitch.
I think potentially, yeah, he's definitely that midfielder who likes to be able to go forward a little bit and has a bit of creativity to him. And then Messina came out beforehand and says he wants two players per position. And in the midfield triangle, I'm looking at it as Pack and Stevenson for the slightly deeper role. Then you'll probably have like a Devin or a Lowry in a similar spot, and then you have Morel, and then that's it. Well, so far you got Stuart White. It depends how much Messina wants Stuart White to play. But I still think that's what's missing, because against sides who will drop deeper, it may become a case that the front three gets isolated because the midfield three have to drop deeper to control the game and control the possession. So then you're missing that little gap between the midfield and the forwards, aren't you? Which we've seen Portsmouth struggle with before. So I think that's the missing cog at the moment. And obviously just centre-half would be just be a personal preference for me, to be honest, because I still don't think our centre-half pairing is as good as Watmore, Burgess, Clark, Burgess, Watmore, Clark, from way back when the side didn't get promoted, we had arguably the best centre-half partnership in the division. It's still not there on that level. But then again, that might be wishful thinking from me, because obviously we arguably had players that shouldn't have been playing in League One at that stage.
Yeah, absolutely. You can see how they've all pressed on as well. The front three, right? The sort of left and right wingers, should we say. We do have quite a lot now, don't we? We seem to have quite a lot. Who stands out for you to be the two starting players? Do you think it's going to be a White and Scully combination, or do you think it's going to be different?
Purely from seniority, it looks like White and Scully, doesn't it? I mean, I haven't seen the wingers, the combinations of wingers, so I'm not sure how well they've like stood together. I guess if you just want two inside forwards, you go with Lane Scully, because they're obviously both on their wrong feet and they tuck in, which would be brilliant. I think Gavin White is right-footed, I believe. But if he is right-footed, that'll add some balance, because I think if we remember to last season, we had a lot of players who, obviously, if they're both on their wrong foot on that side, then that can create some problems and turn things a bit more narrow. But I think Messina trusts Gavin White a lot, and he's proven in the Championship. So I see him starting a lot of games at the right wing. And Scully's just got that creative flair. Yenge, considering he can also play up front, even though mainly he's played on left wing, I think he's the bench player to bring on. And I think Lane is as well. I think we finally got depth in the wing spot, which is very nice. No more putting on Joe Piggott to play left wing, which is mental if you look at it back then. Then obviously you've got Abu Kamara as well, who I read something from Connor Southwell, who's the Norwich City reporter at the Eastern Daily Press, which is their local paper, and he was quite bullish on him. But then again, I'm always reticent with people who are bullish on youth players who've barely played at senior level, but he's the sort of player who can play on the right and up front. I've got details of him, so we can go through those later on afterwards. But no, I just see it as White and Scully, don't you? Unless I think it's for the younger wingers, when they come on and perform, then they take those spots, in my opinion.
Yeah, I feel like they've got to try and win a position. You know, when one wing is not playing as well and they can come on, impact the game, and then they'll start starting. But that's where I see it from there. I think that's a pretty much overview, isn't it, of the team, where we think it's going to be? We wanted to get the lowdown for you guys on Anthony Scully. So we invited on a friend of the show, Gaz Hutchinson from the Stacey West, to have a quick chat about Anthony Scully, what to expect from him, you know, what kind of person he is even. We had a little bit of chat about that. So here's our interview with Gaz Hutchinson from the Stacey West. All right, I'm here with Gary Hutchinson from the Stacey West. Gary, thanks for coming on the show.
Absolute pleasure to be here.
Yeah, so thanks for coming back on the show. Obviously, we had you on before, well, a few times, but before we got Danny Cowley, and things have changed a lot since then. But going in, just before we get into the player, how are you feeling about Lincoln's hopes for next season?
Confident. I think we had an evolutionary season. I think we started, you saw us 0-0 at your place, and we looked really strong. Actually, we were poor after that in spots. But slowly but surely, it's been like plugging a dam. So he made us hard to beat. Then he began to try and get a little bit, Mark Kennedy, this is, tried to get a little bit of excitement in the team, and we got a little bit dour, and then we got a little bit gung-ho. But we've got a decent spine. We made some good January signings. Feel like our transfer window has started particularly well this year. Three players in, permanent deals, which is great. You know, loan deals are only temporary, aren't they? You can't build a future on them. So, but if we finished 11th next season, I'd take that, even though it'd be standing still, because I think that, you know, you stand still in this division, and sometimes actually that's progression because it gets stronger every year.
Yeah, do you think it's getting stronger every year? I'm looking at this season and thinking quite a lot of good teams have come up. A few teams, you know, are unfortunately struggling and come down. Do you feel that the season's got a bit more opportunities, the likes of us and yourselves?
The three best teams went up, but I think the rest of the division was much of a muchness. And I think the teams that have come down will settle into that kind of mid-range pack. Now, I don't mean this disrespectfully, but the likes of yourselves and Charlton and Wickham, Barnsley, Derby, there was very little between. Sheffield Wednesday, Ipswich and Plymouth were better over 46 games. One-on-one, every single team in the top there was as good as those. I mean, we didn't lose a game to those three teams over the course of the season. So it just goes to show, you know, it is quite tight. I think Blackpool will sit in that, Reading will sit in that, Wigan, now they've been taken over, should sit in that. So, you know, it's not getting any easier, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely. All right, let's crack on with the why I've got you on the podcast on the evening on a Monday and talk about Anthony Scully. Now, obviously he went to Wigan last season, but, you know, his season was pretty much hampered by that hernia issue he had, which then operated on in March, and he didn't really get much game time. So we'll revert back to the season before. And I remember we actually spoke about him before when we were previewing the Lincoln game. And one of the comments that came into my head was this idea of you're not quite sure where he plays best in a team and where he fits into a formation. Now, he's a player who's, you know, got 11 goals, 7 assists, I think, in that season. So he always had a high goal output, but where do you think Anthony Scully's best position is and how do you utilise him?
I don't think it's a question I'm going to be able to give you a straightforward answer to, if I'm entirely honest. I love Anthony Scully. I'm not going to lie. He used to live behind me when he was 7 in Camborne and boot balls over the fence. I didn't know it at the time. We just used to keep the balls, free footballs for the dog. He's a great, great guy. And he's likely, you know, to really benefit your squad. Where do you play him? Well, I saw today John Messino saying that he was going to play as a left winger. He doesn't hug the paint. He likes to cut inside. That's right. I also heard that you needed a bit of creativity to beat teams that sit back and kind of need to be broken down. I don't see Anthony Scully doing that. Didn't do that for Michael Appleton. He needs a little bit of space to thrive. He does pop up with a worldie, don't get me wrong. When he cuts in onto his right foot and curl, he's got a real kind of ability to ping shots in. But I was chatting to Freddie, your obviously podcast co-host, and he was telling me things about Rico Hackett, and I'm almost going to tell you exactly the same things back about Anthony Scully, that, you know, he likes to beat people, he likes to take people on, but he doesn't particularly have the pace. He does pick up the pockets, he does kind of pop up here and there, he has got a good shot on him. I see the two of them almost as a like-for-like swap. But having said that, I told Plymouth fans at the beginning of last season, I saw Jordan Garrick and Morgan Whittaker as a like-for-like swap, so what do I know?
Do you think, from Pompey's position, given that Anthony Scully is basically, you could argue he had a season off, considering the injury he had and the move up to the Championship, he didn't really get a look in. Do you think it was worth, well, it could be Pompey, it could have been in any League One club looking for promotion via the playoffs or higher. Do you think Anthony Scully was worth the punt, do you think, to bounce back a little bit?
yeah, Anthony Scully is a top end League One player. There was always a doubt as to whether he was going to be able to go on and do that in the Championship or not. It's the big season, the first big season he had with us when we went to the playoff final. He was the 12th man at the beginning of the season, so he was coming off the bench, but he would pop up with a goal here and there. And eventually, you know, the big question was, where do you play Anthony Scully? And the only answer that we ended up getting was on the pitch. He had to be somewhere. He's not a centre forward. He's not an out-and-out left winger. He's not a 10 because he likes to be able to cut in. He likes to be able to kind of create a bit of space. If anything, he's almost like the old inside forward. And I'm not old enough to remember that, so I'm sure a lot of people listening to this aren't. But almost like when you used to play five across the front and there was a player that played in between the winger and the centre forward, he's kind of that position. He does run down a lot of dead-end alleys, or he did in his second season with Michael Appleton. It was a disappointing season. Now, bear in mind, you know, we gave a right-back player of the year. Scully scored 15 goals in all competitions. Take away things like the hat-tricks against Manchester United in the EFL Trophy, you take away some of the penalties, it was actually a fairly average goal return. And I think goal return can be really misleading sometimes. You go, oh, 37 goals. So how many were against under-21 teams? How many were penalties? I'm not taking away from the boy at all. He's got talent, but I just don't quite know where you deploy it.
Do you think, given the inside forward thing you just mentioned, do you think he would suit well in a 4-3-3 with the front three being sort of really tight together, with the two midfielders on either side doing a lot of the box-to-box up-and-down stuff and putting the through balls in?
Possibly. Do you know what the irony is? He would probably suit our 3-4-3 now with really advanced kind of wing-backs and him tucking in and trying to pick up the pockets of space there. It's probably the Lincoln City right now is probably more suited to Anthony Scully than the two and a half seasons that he was with us. But what I would say is that for a player who never really found a position that you thought that's his, he still had a decent goal return. He was still a fan favourite. He was still a guy that you always wanted to see in and around the team. So, you know, that's credit to him. What he's got to do, he's got to come to you, and the manager and him have got to find a synergy and find where to play him. Play him in the right place. He'll be a success. Try and pigeonhole him as a left winger or a centre forward, and I think you probably might run into trouble.
Sounds like he might need someone, and Pompey really do need even a left back and someone I think who's got a bit more attacking impetus to create that width around him. So if he's going to play a little bit more narrow on that front three, I suppose, then he needs someone maybe a bit more athletic to get up and down the side, Fred. So I think we're going to be looking at that because, you know, Pompey's got Denver Hume, but he can't really defend at all. So you can't really play him in a left back role. And Conor Ogilvy, for all his sort of endeavour and you know, and solidness, still going forward, I don't think he's that sort of pacey, athletic wing back. So it'd be interesting to see. I think it's just come to me, you talking about that 3-4-3 and just whether that's something that Pompey can go to as such. Is there anything else do you think that we can pick out here out of Anthony Scully? And Freddie looks like he's looking at his spreadsheet desperately now here with some figures. So going to go for that, Fred?
You're putting too much faith in me there, looking at the spreadsheet. But one thing though that has come up in my head, Pompey lacked a lot of creativity in the wing spots, either by the crossing being a bit off, but also them creating chances on their own. A lot of the time, the play would go out to the wide area and just die off. Like, for example, a winger would get double-marked or he would hang on to the ball way too long. Do you think Anthony Scully, if he started, could solve one or maybe multiple of those problems? Or do you think he's just a different version of Ronan Curtis where he's going to cut on his right foot all the time?
No, he has got a left foot. I think Ronan Curtis is a great comparison because I think they are incredibly similar footballers. I think having watched Curtis play, I really like Ronan Curtis. So that isn't a slur on Anthony Scully at all. So yeah, it's hard. You can mark him out of the game. And that was really obvious when he was the player that everybody wanted to talk about. Like, we beat Cambridge two seasons ago, 5-1 at their place. And I think Scully scored two and created three or vice versa. He was on fire. He was outstanding. He'd got a hat-trick against the Man United kids. To all intents and purposes, he was going to be our saviour. And I think he scored something like 10 goals before the end of September and he ended up with 16 all season. Something like that. I'm talking from memory there, so I might be wrong. What I would say is he won what... We have an award at the Stacey West, which I think is brilliant, called the XG Award. And we give it to the player whose goal output hugely outweighs their XG, and that's Anthony Scully. So there was one season where, and again, these numbers are just plucked out, but let's say he'd scored 15 goals, but his XG should only have been 9. So that's what you're getting. You're getting that unpredictability. You're not getting a player who particularly has high XG. Yeah, and there were some weeks where you would come away from Sincel Bank and you'd be going, what does Anthony Scully do? And then the next week, he pops up with something outstanding. Final thing I would say about Anthony Scully is what you are 100% getting is a great, great person. So I used to do program interviews with him. And when I rang him up, it was like chatting to a friend. He would be telling you about all manner of different things he had done. And I went to a sponsors event at the beginning of last season, a couple of weeks before the season kicked off, and he kind of came over and he's talking about, you know, just sits down and talks to you for ages and ages. He's just infectious. He's like this little bundle of energy. So he's going to be a great person to have around the squad. How he impacts your first team, that's the big question mark.
Well, we'll have to wait and see, I suppose. But I think Pompey have lacked anyone who can put a shot on target from wide areas and people who can potentially put a ball in the box that Colby Bishop can head in. So we had wingers who couldn't cross and couldn't shoot. So I think at least, even if he is streaky and pops up in certain games, I think he just sort of helps fill a need there of a player who can at least have an eye to goal so that people aren't just double marking Bishop the whole time. And because people basically just left our wingers alone, because what was the point really in bothering? So hopefully, if they think at least he's going to try and he could create something, he could shoot, he could whatever. As you were saying, marking him out the game, that could create at least a little bit more space for our players there going forward. But Gary, thanks again for coming on the podcast.
Absolute pleasure.
Appreciate it. And we'll obviously catch up over the season.
Sound, yep. Look forward to it, chaps. Cheers.
Cheers, dude. Thanks, guys, for coming on the podcast. Yeah, exciting player. Happy about that. Needed to get it in there. Did it a few weeks ago, but wasn't quite long enough to be a Stanley episode after I got pelters for not mentioning who for releasing an episode that was only 15 minutes long. So hope you guys enjoyed that insight. Thanks, guys, again. Freddie, before I let you go, is there anything else we need to focus on, really? Or should we just get geared up for next week's episode, which will be finally previewing the game against Bristol Rovers?
Yeah, it's going to be massive, isn't it? Shall I give you this insight into Abu Kamara from this journalist I mentioned?
Yeah, please do.
He had a chat with Neil Allen. Purely some basic details before I go into his quotes. Kamara's made 3 appearances for Norwich first team, but they've only totaled to 39 minutes, according to Football Reference. Played a lot of games at Premier League 2 level, which is the highest level of youth football, and did very well, scored a lot of goals. Connor Southwell said Kamara is attracting a lot of excitement from Norwich City fans, and he's considered very good technically, a good runner and finisher, and has operated across the front line, so as a striker and a winger. He's considered almost a late developer, so he wasn't like a project from the very beginning. He's developed later and is suddenly topping the ranks of Norwich City prospects. He's described as a striker who often drifts to the left, so that comes across as a player for me who will probably be used on the wing, I think. Takes away the physicality of the centre halves. It gives him a bit more space, doesn't it, I think. And Southwell added that mainly Kamara's played in the wide areas and sometimes a tiny bit deeper rather than an out-and-out striker. So that gives you a vague insight onto what sort of player he is. I don't mind it as a backup option, I think. Potentially a very tricky winger who's very good technically in this instance is probably what we need for a bit of depth. I know, and I'm going to say this, he's only played 39 minutes of football, but then again, we're not expecting him to start. He is to complement Scully and Yenge, presumably, on that left-hand side, and then Kamara is like the fifth option. So I don't mind it as a bit of depth here. It's not like Dane Scarlett, who was on a lot of money, who we expected big things from. It's not like a loan signing of Joe Piggott, for example, who we're also spending a lot of wages on. This is a sort of player to come in and complement things rather than be the main man. So I don't mind it as a loan signing. I'm not sure if you've got any more insight on him here. I'm not sure if you've seen him at all, Kamara, but I hope it works out for him.
Well, I saw him play yesterday. I liked him. I think he's lively. I think he could be a good asset for the team as well. And what I do like, and I'm just going to expand slightly on what you said, which is the fact that we spoke about not having loan players as the people we rely on, and he's come in to add to the squad depth. And I think that's what we wanted to look at, wasn't it? Build your squad, get your permanents in, and then add that sprinkle of maybe extra talent you couldn't just pick up as a squad player, because he's obviously got ability on the ball. He's got that sort of ceiling, which is quite high. And, you know, I think he could be a good impact player for us. There's a lot of talent up front and on the wings, really, isn't there? I don't think we've had this much depth for a long time, actually.
Yeah, like, I was going to say there's a lot of options in there. Those options were always going to be limited to a certain extent, especially just out and out centre forward, because obviously Bishop will be starting. He'll be starting pretty much every game unless he's injured. So him and Sadie, and then you've got players like Yenge and Kamara who can play up front. Obviously, the luxury will be a target man striker to go along, but then again, how often is he going to play? You've got to figure that out as well. I think so far as we things stand, I think it's good depth in the forward areas, and I'm hoping that that solves a lot of the creativity problems the Blues had last season.
Exactly, and that was one of our biggest frustrations, so we'll have to wait and see. Fred, it's been good having your podcast again.
Oh, it's lovely to be back on. And yeah, I'm gearing up for the start of the season, excited now. Had that little break from football, but I'm glad to be thinking about it a lot more again. And at some point, if I can get the guys over, we should have a Peer Forecast Extra on to go through in more detail the other players that we didn't mention in the last show before the start of the season. And also we'll have a main show as well. So you'll have all the ports of listening you probably possibly ask for before the first home game against Bristol Rovers. And I'll be in, I assume, we'll be in the brewery as usual.
We will. And I'll use that word you hate, but putting content out there, Freddie.
Oh, not content, mate, for God's sake.
Content, Freddie. That's what it's all about. Your favourite word.
Broadcasting / journalism. I don't know. Content just, I don't know. To me, it diminishes it. Not because I'm egotistical and I think what we do is the best thing in the entire world, but no, content just sounds like we're putting it out there for the sake of it, if that makes sense.
Which is not true, but I do understand your gripes, but it's funny. We need to have a bet, Freddie, at the start of the season, and if you lose, you're going to get the word content tattooed somewhere on you.
I'm not getting anything tattooed on me. I could not possibly accept a bet and then not go through with it at the end. I couldn't do that.
Yeah. All right, Jake. The Sean Raggett one. I'm not letting it go. It's years down the line. We'll be back next week with Joe Barton. We'll be a special guest on the podcast to preview Bristol Rovers. Obviously not. All right, that's enough now. I've run out of steam because it is literally 11:30 at night. So just so we could help Andy Mitchmore out there with the time difference in his little sauna cabin.
Absolutely. And I'm at work in about 6 hours. So I'm going to enjoy that one.
Sorry, Neil Allen. But until next time. Play up, Pompey.
You have been listening to the PO Forecast for Pompey News Now, available on SoundCloud, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Follow PO Forecast and Pompey News Now on Twitter for more information.
And there is the full-time whistle.